busy and you were advising on a movie or something last week. What was that about?
Yeah, I'm not supposed to talk about it.
But okay. It was on your Facebook.
I can't show the picture, but I was coaching Joaquin Phoenix how to talk and walk like a doc.
Joining us this morning is Mike Morse in Detroit's Top 30. Mike Morse is in here to tell us about the backpack giveaway.
Adapt and change things up a little bit every year.
Hi, this is Mike Morse. Welcome to Open Mic, our podcast here with Kevin Dietz. And I'm so excited to welcome my personal cardiologist, Dr. Joel Kahn, here today. Dr. Kahn and I and Kevin are talking about all things health, all things regarding what diets you should be looking out for today, what oil is the best, what kind of exercise should you be doing, should you be on a statin, and many, many more questions. So you're not going to want to miss this episode. Stay tuned. I don't have anything prepared as an opening, but I'm excited to have you here for lots of reasons. So you're my personal cardiologist, which I think I'm, you know, allowed to say since I'm the HIPAA holder here. You didn't bring a file, so you don't have my file in front of you. But, you know, I think, you know, you're a world-renowned cardiologist. You have been on all the TV shows from Dr. Phil, The Doctors, Dr. Oz. You've been on with Joe Rogan for several hours. You're a famous vegan restaurateur with three fabulous restaurants that I frequent often. And I came to see you a few years ago. I don't know how many years, probably four or five now, when you went into kind of a concierge-type practice because – as some listeners may or may not know, my father died early on from a heart attack at age 49. And up until I turned 50, I was scared of dying for the last 25 years. And when I was in my early 20s, I went to the Mayo Clinic and I had, I did stress tests and I was seeing doctors. And the medicine and nutrition changed and changes so much. I was so confused and my numbers weren't great, even though I was working out, even though I was eating what I thought was semi-healthy. And I really was lost and confused until I came to see you. And this is not supposed to be a commercial and you're not sponsoring the show, but since I've been with you, my numbers have all been improving. And I feel like I have someone that I could call and ask questions to when I'm struggling with, should I eat this? Should I do this? And so for that, I thank you.
Thank you.
And that's one reason I invited you onto this show, because I think there's a lot of people out there like me. Right. And I had some of my staff put questions together, and there are so many questions about diets, about what kind of oils are good, about, you know, how to protect ourselves to live longer. And is veganism really the way to go or not to go? And another thing I like about you is that while you are very opinionated, I listened to your 4-hour podcast with Dr. Rogan. Dr. Rogan.
Jesus. He thinks he's a doctor. With, Joe Rogan experience.
With Joe Rogan. And you were fighty with him and you didn't back down. And I really admired that. And you were very opinionated. And I didn't love the guy that you were debating with on that show. I thought he was kind of boring. Kessler, I think his name was. You don't have to say anything bad about him. I'm not saying anything bad about him. I just thought he was kind of boring. And you know, and he was trying to fight you all the way about, you know, about because you like to talk about studies. You like to talk about epidemiology and it makes sense. And I was agreeing with you because, you know, you're not saying anything all that controversial. You're saying what you put in your body matters. If you put good things in your body and you exercise and you meditate and you take a few supplements here and there, you will live longer. You will live healthier life. Why do people have to argue with you about that? That's pretty interesting to me. So before I let you get a word in here, I'm going to let you, because you did this on Joe Rogan, tell the listeners a little bit about your background, where you went to school. And I like the fact that, you know, you were a practicing cardiologist for many years. You're still a practicing cardiologist, but just kind of doing it in a different way. So I'm going to let you kind of sum it up for me.
Well, thank you very much. And honestly, the kind of fear that you held and we have diminished, yeah, is a very common thing I deal with. I had a patient today, a couple decades younger than you, who's walking around mortified. And, you know, some people deserve to be scared. Very few. Most can, you can put it in perspective, and there's a very long and rosy life ahead. In fact, I've never been more optimistic we're going to impact human health, human longevity, diminished disease, diminished medication. It's going to take some work. We've got some clear science advances to make, but it's a most exciting time, clearly, to be a physician. I'm just turned 60. I mean, I love it so much. I'm not stopping. I'll be in my office for many, many years. Sign a 20-year lease right now if my landlord's listening. I really mean that. So I grew up 2 miles from here, went to high school in Southfield. Thought I was going to be in the family furniture business, but about age 15, my dad said to me, wonderful father, wonderful business, still in existence, Gardner White Furniture. Of course, your friend Ross knows him very well. Yeah, I think we're going to sell. I'm not sure you should really take 10 years to get your MBA, and we may not be here. This is a true story, went and talked to my rabbi at age 15 and was kind of interested in the synagogue life and had a pretty good upbringing in the Jewish community. And I walked in his office and told him I was thinking about going to rabbinical school. And I kid you not, he hit his forehead about as hard as a human can and said, what did you just say? And he said, don't say that. He goes, this is the craziest of professions. They never let you have a moment. And I quickly got admitted to the University of Michigan Interflex program, where in high school you get admitted without taking the MCATs to a combined undergrad graduate thing. It doesn't exist anymore there. It's still in a few other places. It's more the European model of you just know you want to be a doc. I had a little heart murmur as a kid. I used to see a pediatric cardiologist. I saw the machines and the bells and the lights. I thought it was all pretty cool. I didn't mind the smell of alcohol and cotton balls of the old days, if you think back. And that worked out great. So I went from Ann Arbor, but graduated Michigan summa cum laude med school, which is a nice little pearl in your hat. Went down to Dallas, was vegan already. I actually, at age 18 in Ann Arbor, the dormitory food transitioned me in about 1 week to plant-based salad. It was salad bar life. I ate at the Liberty Bell on Liberty in Ann Arbor at the salad bar, ate in the dorm salad bar. And by the time I was in med school, I started hearing these little droplets that nutrition has something to do with human health. There wasn't much, but there was a few little raindrops. Went down to Dallas, very meat-heavy community with the Fort Worth Stockyards, and did just some awesome cardiology training. Thought that was the end of it, but then I got turned on like a lot of us. I was there in the really early days of cath lab, angioplasty, ultimately stenting, and bagged, I say it's probably the best spot in the world to go learn how to do angioplasty in Kansas City, Missouri. A real maverick, a cowboy boot wearing cardiologist, got basically asked to leave Mayo Clinic because he was so innovative. But he would break every rule to get to the end point. Never patient safety rule, but break stupid bureaucratic
rules. This was one of your mentors?
That was my mentor for a year. And I came out in 1990, came back to Michigan, just had wife, kids. We all had our roots here. A couple of years in Ann Arbor, and I've been practicing in suburban Detroit since. And it was a very typical practice about 10 years ago. My patients would hear, because 1990, the first really solid science that if you're a sick heart patient, changing your diet to a plant-based diet was of scientific proven value, Dr. Dean Ornish, by 1990. So my entire practice, I would quietly mention to patients, you might explore, here's a book, here's a, well, there weren't websites for a while, but when websites came up. But I really got the urge, boy, I'm doing the same thing. Even though I've got a whole lot of other knowledge than most cardiologists, I mean, I'm writing scripts for this medicine and this test. And I found the right program to go back and really train. And there's terms out there, functional medicine, integrated medicine, root cause medicine, natural medicine. But I got a really good university program, and I just did it on weekends. Like, people go hustle to get a master's on weekends. And about 7-8 years ago, I said, it's got to change. I got to look for that spot where I can create my own clinic. There were basically no models for it. There's still, I would say, probably less than 10 of us in the country that do what would be fairly called integrative cardiology. I mean, I do serious medicine. I got sick people with heart failure and rhythm problems.
Let me just slow you down.
I want to go back. I want to know where your mama and your papa talked to you about food. And
right. So this is 6-7 years ago?
Yeah, 6-7 years ago.
So basically, just for listeners who don't understand this, because I didn't understand this, you were doing surgery. You were doing traditional cardio medicine until you decided one day that you were going to open up this integrative cardiology practice. Is that true?
That's exactly true.
And in that practice, you it's kind of a, I use the word concierge service. You're not really taking traditional insurance anymore.
Right.
You're charging a decent amount of money, not a ton of money. It's absolutely worth it. But you come in, you meet with you for 30 minutes, an hour, you take a detailed history. You do ask about your parents. You do ask about what, you know, your childhood. You ask everything under the sun, and then you look at every medical record that the person can gather, and then you come up with a course of treatment. Is that about right?
Right. So, you know, that is exactly right. So we call that functional medicine root cause. I want to know about your diet, your allergies, your dentist, your exercise, your sleep, your right. sexual patterns.
Yeah.
The whole
you
thing.
You ask a lot about sex. I want to be honest.
No.
But let me tell you, usually
how I get people to wake up is that's working well or not. That's a much bigger hook for lifestyle change right. than
luckily mine's
fear
working.
Of heart disease.
But
amen.
You know, I've never, you know, when you asked me the first time I was with you 4 or 5 years ago, I had never had a history like that. Yeah. I mean, most doctor's offices, I think, I don't know, Kevin, if you know, but or if you remember from the first time you've had given a long history, but they don't take the time and ask those kind of questions. And he asked me for every record. I gathered all my records, all my blood work that I've had over the last 20 plus years of heart studies. And Dr. Khan looked at those, which was really kind of a refreshing meeting, our first meeting. Yeah. And then I remember you started drawing on the board and talking about a lot of things that I didn't know of. So I'll let you.
It makes sense though, because like if you're, you know, that's where the solution would be. You know, you go to the doctor and they're like, oh, do you drink? How often do you smoke? You know, there's these a couple questions that people probably lie on in the boxes. Here it's like you're sitting down for a consultation. You're like, let me tell you all about myself. Yeah. And then you can reverse engineer it to say, well, this is what happens. And not only can you prevent heart disease or prevent these problems, you can actually reverse some of the problems you already have.
Well, it's exactly that. It's actually kind of sadly, shockingly, there is data on studies that have been done that the patient isn't aware of. You have a CAT scan because you have a cough, and the CAT scan says you have no pneumonia or you've got clear lungs. But the report says your heart arteries are calcified. That's a diagnosis that matters, but it was not either mentioned by the doc to the patient or the patient didn't hear it. And that's the other part. There's a lot of people have been told what's going on with their health in a way that they didn't understand that happened too quick. And, you know, I make the time. You know, I draw out, you might remember, I sort of actually remember drawing out some results in some of your studies, which were healthy and sexy, but I did. And, you know, and it's not always happy news to tell a patient, wow, you know, your CAT scan 3 years ago. So the point of it all is, the whole foundation is, heart disease is, and heart disease is my focus. I do work on other, people have other issues, weight and sleep and stress, but it's really heart disease. It is almost always definable why a person has it. It is almost always identified a decade before the bypass, the stent, the emergency room, before there's erectile dysfunction for the guys. You can go upstream, and that's the bottom line. So using the right labs and the right questions, the idea is to keep you young as long as possible. And that's not pie in the sky. That's absolutely scientific and predictable. So it's a different approach. It's an early approach. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm working on your health from the next 20 years. Don't be scared. You're not going to have a stroke or heart attack. But what we do now will make a difference in 2030.
I can't believe there's only 10 of you around this country.
We don't have a society. We don't have a foundation. We don't have much of a training program.
But you're keeping yourself, I mean, not only are you seeing patients, but you are traveling this country. You're on every doctor show. You're on every podcast. You were on the doctors last week. I follow you on Instagram and Facebook. You are busy, and you were advising on a movie or something last week. What was that about?
Yeah, I'm not supposed to talk about
it was not on your Facebook.
I can't show the picture, but I was coaching Joaquin Phoenix how to talk and walk like a doc, which
is awesome.
On set, pretty cool. He was as receptive and low key. And just to give him a shout out, people don't know, he's been vegan for about 40 of his 45 years. He's so caring for animals. After a movie set, he goes with these people in LA and they go to these animal vigils to try and save them from being slaughtered at farms. And he's in jeans and a sweatshirt. And that's Joker.
Cool.
He just cares, and he's low key actually. So it was a very cool experience.
Wow.
You know, these shows, people argue, are these shows of value? I've been on Dr. Oz once. I've been on the doctor show a lot. In general, I think they're actually pretty good people. It's just, you know, the burden of being exciting an hour a day, 5 days a week is a pretty big burden. So they cross the line and make, you know, some crazy topics timely. But it's pretty cool to reach that many people.
Well, you're spreading some good information. I assume it's good for your business and restaurants and all that, which is can't be a bad thing. But let's get into some of the topics.
Sure.
That, you know, you've helped me with and that I think people are talking about in the media. And I mean, there's so many different diets out there right now. So if somebody comes to you or asks you the question, what's the best diet on the market right now? Do you have an answer for that or does it depend?
I do. There's two ways to answer. The simplest one and the reason I will reach out to Chris Kresser and the Rogan Show, or even the meat-eating orthopedic surgeon we were mentioning, Dr. Baker, who's whack, but clean, dirty. That's the best distinction. If you're pulling into a drive-thru, if you're eating in a yellow bag, if you're getting your food in a window, if you're eating out of a vending machine or a gas station, there's a rule, don't get your gas and your food in the same building. That's a simple rule. The whiter the bread, the sooner you're dead. These are simple food rules. If it's made in a plant, skip it. If it's made on a plant, eat it. These are some food rules. So clean, dirty. And the one thing even colleagues of mine that differ from plant-based approach, exclusive plant-based approach, because I talk to all kinds of people, is they're all clean eaters. And that's why I'm willing to work with anybody anytime. They're teaching the public, get away from junk. Get away from the middle of the grocery store, the frozen food with 64 chemicals that you can't pronounce. Quinoa should be the only food you eat you can't spell or pronounce. Everything else you can't spell or pronounce, you shouldn't be eating it. I mean, one ingredient foods, cucumber, broccoli, celery, okay, ribeye, something that has one ingredient would be a real good idea. That's the simplest. The second, I'd say, and only final follow-up, is you can go to the U.S. News and World Report, and they have a panel of food experts, and it agrees with a lot of other things, Harvard School of Public Health. Top diets in the world, the DASH diet. It's a blood pressure diet, dietary approach to stop hypertension. It's basically the Mediterranean diet. Eat more fruits, eat more vegetables, eat more grains, eat more beans, eat more fish and less red meat. And in my case, I just put something other than the fish. I put tempeh. But the DASH diet, the Mediterranean diet, is a real good public place to be. There truly is no controversy. So that's end of story. I choose to be 100% plant-based. And for a small slice of heart patients, it's absolutely therapeutic beyond belief how quick they respond to that.
But if people are listening to you, you will treat people who eat meat.
Yes, I will. I'll even treat them nicely. Right.
You may try to convince them to eat a little differently.
Yeah.
So keto diet.
Cool.
You don't like it.
No, I'm on it right now.
Keto diet?
Yeah, there's a plant keto diet.
I thought you didn't like it. Did I misread something?
You didn't misread.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
You know, just to define, if you lower, it's actually to be technical, your net carbs, but just say lower your carbs. We're not eating lots of bananas and breads and white rice and shredded wheat cereal. And you amp up something, so you're going to usually amp up your fats. That's the true keto diet. So you've got either meats or butter or cheeses.
What do you got?
Which can be done with olive oil and nuts and seeds and avocados and tempeh. Some people make the mistake of bumping their protein way too high. But if you up your fats and lower your carbs, you will burn through your stores of carbohydrate in your body, which are in your liver and your muscle, in about 2 days. And you make an alternative fuel called ketone bodies. You can do this in really extreme illness like diabetic ketoacidosis and starvation. But you can do it while you're eating. And it turns out our brain and our organs can adapt to ketones. And you will see some benefit predictably of losing weight. Some people feel they've cleared up kind of brain fog. There is more religion about this than any other diet right now. You know, I big bodybuilders and others about losing weight and energizing themselves. There's very little hardcore science. It all developed out of actually kids with epilepsy respond to this. They do well on this diet, although there's side effects in the literature. That goes back decades and decades. But nobody knows for sure. Was it Hugh Jackman or LeBron James or Halle Berry, but somebody in the media caught the buzz, and it gives people the food they love to eat. Here's your meat, here's your butter, here's your cheese, here's your bacon.
Isn't that the Atkins diet? How is that different than the Atkins diet?
It is not different than the Atkins diet.
It's not?
It isn't. It's just called a cooler name with cooler people. There was nothing typically but isn't cool about
aren't you
Robert
on
Atkins.
Keto diets to get into ketosis?
To get into ketosis.
And what is ketosis for layman terms?
If you successfully do this and you take a test strip you could buy at the drugstore of your urine, or I've got a little tool I breathe in that's kind of new and cool, you can determine that you've got an abnormally high level of these compounds in your blood and you're fueling your body on it. And you might see, number one, some people get sick before they get better. They actually feel it's called keto flu. There's something called keto crotch, to be a little racy there.
I've never had that.
Sometimes it's believed you will detoxify some built up chemicals and plastics, and you may get a little headachy and sick for a few days. That's very common. But if you keep going, that usually clears. And there are people that are just absolutely religious about how they feel. I will say the reason I've been viciously outspoken about it being a bad long-term option using animal foods is there's 10 serious research studies that say if you look 10, 20 years down the road, death rates go up doing the ketogenic animal food diet long-term. And all my friends in the keto sector of the world health experts don't mention this data. And it's, here's a study of 240,000 people. Well, we shouldn't really ignore that. So I don't mind people talking about even the animal keto diet. I did it for 2 weeks. I dropped some weight. It felt great. I went back to whole foods of plants and other foods. And I went back. It's called cyclical keto.
So you're not on it right now, or you are on it?
Well, I am on. So you can do this with 100% plants, get tons of fiber, get brightly colored fruits and veggies. They're going to be blackberries and raspberries and arugula and walnuts and parts. There's zero science for it. It's kind of cool to be in this sector and bring the health up from it, but we need some science. So I'll do it for a week.
What do you say to people? I have a lawyer in my office who was telling me he's on the keto diet and on the meat diet. Right. So it's like Atkins in the 90s, as much meat and cheese and butter and fat,
protein,
right. All the meat. And he says, but my numbers are great. My cardiologist tells me my numbers have never been better. I'm losing weight. Yep. So are you saying that this is okay short-term but not okay long-term? Is that the takeaway?
Well, number one, it's good that he's actually checking numbers. A lot of health authorities that, or athletes or stars that people are picking this up from, Kim Kardashian has done keto at times and dropped some weight. Now she does largely plant-based according to her Instagram. Good for her. It's a better long-term choice. But a lot of people, they don't never check a lab. About 30% of people on the animal keto diet, their cholesterol goes 180 to 580 in about 6 weeks. I'm talking like the highest cholesterols I've ever seen in my life. I've seen 700 on the keto diet. You do not want to stay there. Even keto animal authorities, Chris Kresser. Chris Kresser says,
My opponent
on Rogan. No, he actually says, I only do this for about 10 days because I get really nervous what my cholesterol profile looks like in 2 weeks. Nobody's checking that. The word should be, at least find out if you're that 30% of people that hyper respond in a bad way, because you may be doing yourself some harm. Number two, a heart patient shouldn't do the animal keto diet. It's inflammatory and it raises their cholesterol in a substantial number. So that gets to the question, hopefully we'll come to, how the hell do you know if you have heart disease or not, which is the fundamental thing I do in my office. But it's hard to argue. I'm never going to win an argument with the lawyer in your office. I feel good. My labs are good. I kind of like the food. I still would argue that person, you need a quick checkup if you have heart disease or not. You might rethink it. It's terrible for the environment. And that's where we get to Beyond Meat burgers and Impossible burgers.
Which I love.
Talk about that. but they are so much better. The animal industry and the environment. And I'm no tree-hugging crazy man. I mean, I should be wearing plant-based shoes. I'm wearing leather shoes today. I have some of the others too. I think animal rights is a cool thing. Nobody needs to be embarrassed about being kind in the world. But, the ability to feed Americans and the world the way we eat, the way it's exploding in India and China is crazy. And we have to come up with a solution. And so the keto diet as a solution for 20 years, it's a no-go.
Okay. So let's move on. First of all, I love, I do like the Beyond and the Impossible burgers, but your handmade, homemade burgers at Green Space are much better.
Thank you.
So I do have friends who don't like to go to the doctor much. Kevin, when was the last time you were at a cardiologist's office?
Last time I was at the doctor, I was born.
Whoa. I don't think are you that type of guy?
Whoa.
What? Are you kidding?
No, I'm not.
I was... Yeah, check him out, Doc. So we have a patient here, Doc. I was about to say I know people who don't go to doctors.
He kept his clothes on and then made a diagnosis.
He's turning a little red. No, so Kevin, you've never been to a cardiologist?
I haven't.
Are both parents still alive?
Yeah, all my grandparents lived over 100 and my parents are both alive. Everybody,
and what kind of
nobody dies in
what kind
family.
Of diet are you on?
So the diet I like is the intermittent fasting.
Yep.
And I was gonna ask you about that and whether or not your body needs time to rest or not. But my problem has always been this whole fad diet thing. Like if I see somebody's on the cabbage soup diet, I'll be like, great, let's do that. But I won't change my whole lifestyle. And so it's always, I'll do this and lose 10 pounds. So I've been the same weight. Well, I've been within, 20 pounds up or down forever. And if I get high, then I do one of these
Do you feel like you're carrying extra weight around your belly?
Yeah, right now I am. Right now, and that's why I'm now intermittent fasting again. But
how old are you, Kevin?
54.
So you need to go see Dr. Khan. Dr. Khan, if Kevin comes in to see you, this is like a perfect segue, which I purposely didn't know we were going to be, I didn't know Kevin has not seen a doctor since he was an infant. But, somebody comes in to see you, what do you do for him?
Very simple. And probably even before I'd see Kevin, particularly because of now a personal connection, he needs a CT scan of his heart called a calcium CT scan, takes 10 seconds. Well, you need a script, which I'll give you before you leave or before I leave. But you need, it's actually irresponsible to be 45 plus and not know if your coronary arteries are aging gracefully or not at all, or if your coronary arteries, your heart arteries, are aging at an incredibly accelerated rate, because it's a really hard formula with any lab, with any blood pressure measurement.
Do you see people who have grandparents still alive who feel like Kevin does, like, my family history is great, I don't need to go to the doctor? Is that common?
It's pretty common. It's not.
Are you saying it's stupid?
Yes.
Use the word stupid.
We know that's stupid.
I want him. Well, Kevin, we're just starting the show, God's sake.
I call it reckless.
I'll pay for the appointment.
Reckless.
Go see Joel tomorrow.
Reckless. So it turns out, there are many problems with the American medical system, but, mammogram, colonoscopy, heart scan, no, it's not in the workup. I mean, it's the number one killer of men and women, 2,300 people a day. Lawyers drop dead all the time. At age 45, 50, 55 of sudden heart attacks, no warning. All you got to do is for $100, go to your local hospitals. 10 seconds later, you're done.
I've done this.
Painless, no needle CT scan that gives you a number. If your number's zero, you are your grandparents' grandchild. The number comes back 142. You got old arteries for 54 years old. You do have a little crease in your earlobe that I peeked at under your headphone. That is about a 70% accurate marker that there might be a little aging going on. And I hate to say it, when you lose a little hair at the top of your head early in life, these are scientific clues. They're none of them are 100% accurate. But, it's just, as I say, that's why dead execs don't get bonuses. It's irresponsible. You're running a business. You're running a family. Not to be certain you're not going to drop dead of the number one killer. Number two, I do labs on you. And number three, you probably should have somebody massage your prostate or something. I mean, at a minimum, PSA. But the recommendation is age 50, have a colonoscopy. There is now a stool sample, a genetic stool sample called Cologuard, that for low-risk people is probably an adequate screen, and you can avoid the tube. Although, I got to tell you, the couple of times I had colonoscopy, I thought it was the best day of my life. Give me propofol, give me redheaded nurses.
You prescribed my first colonoscopy, which I had in the last year or two. Yeah. Joel made me go get one, and I did it. Thank God it was all good. So basically what he's saying is a CAT scan before you go see him. When he comes to see you, he'll do labs, which means blood work. You'll take a detailed history of him.
Yeah.
And
either pronounce you young and probably going to be around for decades and decades. And I do a lot of feel-good, happy stuff with people. In fact, I tell them you don't need to come back for a long time. Or we find such early disease, we're really working on low risk situation, but God, the people that walk in and are just, full of unknown silent plaque. And that's why people can drop dead. Who'd we lose? We lost a 44-year-old Food Network, Oscar Ruiz, last week, 44 years old, famous for walking around with plates of meat on the Food Network, dropped
not
dead
a
of a heart attack.
Not a shocker.
That was not a shocker. He wasn't that overweight, but his 0% carb t-shirts are kind of famous on the web.
But how rare is it? I'm curious about heredity, because obviously I was scared about heredity. Yeah. My dad died at 49. I'm now 52. But I was scared until I turned 50.
Right.
So Kevin's not scared at all.
Right.
Do you ever see the opposite, that, you have people with great heredity, great genes, great DNA, so they think, and they come in and they have problems?
Sure.
Or is that
rare?
Is that rare?
Because, the gene pool gets diluted. There's, if four of your four grandparents hit centenarian, that'd be like, it is great to have longevity in your
family.
Three
of the four, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. That is truly an amazing thing. But I still, life is so precious.
It doesn't cost anything.
I know.
And it's
mental.
The formula to characterize and put down on paper where you stand is such a simple thing to do. I mean,
the doctors always tell you to change what you eat, exercise more, stop drinking, stop smoking. Sure. I mean, who needs that in their life?
I assume you're a meat eater.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to forsake all that. You actually can always do better just eating more fruits and vegetables. Eat some broccoli, have a salad, and without changing too much else, you've just upgraded your health a lot. I'm pretty, you know, friendly, low-key in the office. I'm not expecting perfection. I'm perfect. My lifestyle is pretty perfect. I even sleep.
He'll give you some vitamins.
Yeah, maybe.
He's big on to K2. He's big into... Yeah,
if he's got stuff.
Right? If he's got stuff. But he'll give you some vitamins. Yeah. Baby aspirin or no? How is your feeling on baby aspirin these days?
That's why you get the scan. And that's because it's called personalized medicine. You know, Mike Morris is not Kevin Dietz. And we can identify how different you are. So the current vogue is it's a daily aspirin a day is not appropriate unless you've had a stent, a heart attack, a stroke. Or if you do this CAT scan and you got some schmutz, as we call it in my community, you got, you know, build up a plaque, then you take a baby aspirin a day. I don't take a baby aspirin a day. I got the clean ones.
I don't either. So intermittent fasting.
Cool topic.
So I know you love Walter Longo.
You say it so well.
You gave me his book, and I've bought lots of boxes of Prolon from you. Sometimes I hate it. Sometimes I hate it.
Yeah,
but
right.
I do it. Let's talk about intermittent fasting because I have lots of people that I know on it.
Right.
I have friends who do 24 hours of fasting twice a week. I have friends who do 5 days a week, 8-hour periods of eating. I've been experimenting with that for the last 2 weeks. I eat from noon to 8 p.m. and nothing outside of that. Now, I don't know how many calories I'm supposed to have in that 8 hours. So I'd like to talk about that. You know, the Prolon diet is 5 days of about 700 calories a day. That puts you into ketosis for those 5 days. And you say that's really good. And it resets all of your organs in your brain and your blood, and all good things come from that. So what are the best practices when it comes to intermittent fasting these days?
Yeah, great question. A lot of science, a lot of experience on my part. I lecture on this topic around the country. So it reflects two things. One, there's too much food for everybody, and there's obesity all over the United States, part of which is too many calories, part of which is we live in the dirtiest, toxic time in our world between water, air, chemicals, plastics, all kinds of things. Don't drink out of plastic bottles anymore, Mike. It's terrible stuff. Get yourself a water filter.
Another
system.
Note.
Get yourself a glass bottle of stainless steel.
Need some new water in here, please.
I do water dehydration rather than drink out of plastic bottles. I mean, the city of Birmingham has lead in their tap water. You need water filter systems in your home and in your office now. It's a shame, but it's true. So let's go back. We have a need because we're fighting obesity, and we need a solution. And it turns out one solution is eat less. That's pretty obvious. But if you can structure it. Number two, some people want to live better without disease, without medication. And any animal you fast, any animal model, you restrict their calories, you drop their calories, they live longer. That's Dr. Longo and many other scientists' work. You want a better brain? You eat less in an animal model. You want a thinner body with better hair? You eat less in an animal model. Does that translate to humans? We think so. And that's what's driving this, you know, this new wave of anti-aging medicine, which is real and authentic and will really allow us to reach Kevin's grandparents' age more predictably. I have no doubt we'll be able to, you know, we're all young enough around the table, we're going to see the benefits. We're 5 years away from the first drug proven to maybe promote the chance of lowering your risk of cancer and prolonging your life. And it's always going to be lifestyle more than drugs, but everybody wants the drug. It might be metformin, might be something called rapamycin, might be a field called senolytics. In the meantime, I'll give you an example. I was listening to a podcast 2 weeks ago. The head of the National Institutes of Health Brain Aging Section, an MD of world renown, textbooks, papers, asked on the podcast, what the heck do you do for your lifestyle? How many supplements do you take? Vitamins? None. Okay, so what do you do? I exercise and I fast, because those are the only two things proven to potentially, you know, prolong your life. And hence, fasting has those two impetuses. Deal with weight and potentially promote long-term health and avoidance of disease. So there's a whole bunch of, the simplest thing to do is sort of what you mentioned. It's actually called TRE, time-restricted eating. 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, shut your mouth. You know, drink water, shut your mouth. Drink black coffee, drink herbal tea, drink filtered water, but shut your mouth. And that could be, I will very commonly do 8 p.m. to 10 a.m. That's about 14 hours, but I will stretch it a little longer. It's very simple to adopt. a brittle diabetic should be careful and probably not do it. And there is some studies that suggest it promotes a better weight. It's what you said. It gives your body 12 hours to rebuild damaged DNA, to build up antioxidant stores. There's fairly sound science. This isn't woo. This is real. Dr. Longo, University of Southern California, kind of the leading longevity expert, would tell you 12 to 14 hours is enough. Now, there are other experts, a guy named Dr. Panda, that talks about 17, 18 hours. That's not so undoable if you don't really need breakfast.
It's really skipping breakfast.
You eat lunch and dinner.
And it avoids the late night snacking. Right.
And really, sure, you should eat healthy, but you don't have to count calories.
You don't have to count calories.
You automatically eat less because it's fewer hours.
Yeah,
and you're full then once you've fasted.
And if it's 200 calories a day less, that's a lot over the course of a year. And it's not so socially unacceptable. I mean, you don't have too many powered breakfast meetings. Coffee's on the table, fine. Filter water's on the table. Green teas, herbal teas are all good. There's a fair amount of science. There is something called alternate day fasting, ADF. That takes discipline. I mean, one day you eat nothing, the next day you're unlimited one day. People lose weight. People they lower their blood sugar if it's abnormal. They lower their inflammation. But that happens with these other programs.
So I did that the last time I lost weight because, like I said, I literally look at my scale and I'll do what I need to get to a certain number. Yeah. And so I did that, but I did it. I want to say twice a month, I just completely skipped a day and went into the next day. And I would go 35 hours, 40 hours without eating. And the weight like really drops off fast.
What we need to develop, and we'll make millions, is something that literally locks down the kitchen at about 8 p.m. by Bluetooth.
The prison diet.
By, LifeLock.
Kosher. We could do a kosher.
Absolutely. Because, late night eating, number one, a lot of people eat 600 calories from 8 o'clock on, whether they're chips or guac or popcorn, skinny popcorn or... all kinds of other abysmal things. It really stresses your body out. It ages you. It promotes diabetes. It promotes brain aging. We got to stop doing it.
So is it mostly for losing weight or does it help with heart health?
They're one and the same. When you will probably lose some weight. When you lose weight, you actually help your brain. Big people have smaller brains. Big people have more Alzheimer's down the road. That's a scientific fact in 50 studies. Big people have more it's not anti-big people, but big people have more diabetes. We know that. Big people have more back pain. It's the whole thing. But you will probably lower your LDL cholesterol, your triglycerides. You'll probably bring your blood sugar down. Some people combine keto diet and intermittent fasting, plant-based keto with 14, 15 hours a day of eating. That's probably in today's crazy society where we just, we have buffets everywhere and, we have abundant calories. In 2011, for the first time in the United States, more people were suffering diseases of calorie excess than calorie deficiency. Yes, there are clearly and sadly still kids that don't get enough calories a day, but more people and more people, they're all struggling with their tire around their waist. And that is a lethal tire around the waist.
Welcome back, the McRib.
Yeah. I drive through places for coffee and bathrooms, and that's all you should do. And for breakfast, just skip them.
Is there any healthy fast food?
Tough one. You could say it's interesting to have the Impossible Burger at Burger King. I wouldn't call it healthy. I'd call it on par with
They put
burger.
Mayo on it.
I know. my peers, I haven't had one yet. I'm not anti that. We have the Beyond Meat Burger at Green Space Cafe. But I sure don't eat a lot of them. And they apparently will grill it on a separate grill without mayonnaise and cheese if you tell them you're plant-based. I haven't had the joy of experiencing that yet. Is there any healthy fast food in a standard? It used to be baked potato at Wendy's. I ate so many plain baked potatoes at Wendy's.
They all have eggs now, though. What about like an egg McMuffin or something?
He doesn't
like
eggs. That's not
vegan.
We don't talk eggs. Yeah. What about the bean burrito at Taco Bell?
Yeah, that, other than the salt, that's been a go-to. Taco Bell's a pretty plant-based friendly place. You say healthy. There is a franchise out of L.A. It's not a franchise. It's soon to be a franchise. It's called Veggie Grill. There's probably 20 of them in L.A. They just opened at Harvard Square in Boston this weekend, and there's six of them in Chicago. There's five of them in D.C. They're coming to Detroit. They're as good as it gets for plant-based, faster food. But, there's a zillion unhealthy vegans eating vegan milkshakes, vegan fries, vegan burgers. I mean, if you want to transition off of animals for the sake of the world and the animals go there.
Right. That's like, a good point.
Pretty quick.
Just because you're vegan doesn't mean you're going
to
be skinny.
That gets back to junk and clean. And yeah. I mean, clean eating, hashtag clean eating is the most important message. And that's called a broccoli. That's called a salad. That's called a cucumber. That's called an apple. Learn
some people also call that boring. Yeah, well, I think Kevin might be in that category. I'm not.
It can be really interesting. You know, the range of brightly colored fruits and vegetables, grains and beans can, you know, keep you going for your whole life. And the great chefs out there, the great chefs in Paris are.
You need a good chef.
Yeah.
The problem is cooking vegan at home is tough.
Yeah.
Going to restaurants like yours and others, and I love going to other cities and experiencing great restaurants, and I've texted you some of their menus, and that's fun, but really doing this at home is difficult.
Yeah, so, you know, people, and I don't have financial interest in any of these, but purplecarrot.com, people order the box. Well, there's a Tom Brady 12 line that's all plant-based. So you have fun with your family for half an hour making something creative. You can't do that every meal, every day. It's too expensive, but it might give you some insight. There's some companies you can order a few meals from ready to go so you do nothing. Sprinly.com, MamaSays.com, Sakara.com. Again, it exposes people, and I often tell my patients, you know, you're not ready to do gourmet vegan cooking at your house. Do this for a couple weeks. I'm not telling you to do it forever. It's expensive. You know, some people, and I've referred people to a chef for a few months, get them going.
You know, one thing
it can be as simple though is, you know, can you bake a baked potato and a sweet potato? Maybe find out some purple potatoes. Can you know learn how to make a whole wheat pasta with marinara and a boatload of kale, spinach, garlic, onion? I mean, these things are tasty. These are simple skills. You're gonna start chopping mirepoix. You know, you're out of there. You're bored. Right.
Does your diet impact depression at all? Or?
Yeah. Plants power happiness. There's good data. You know. For a lot of people like that, you know, just one meal a day going a little greener. I learned how to make a green smoothie in the morning or lunch. Some people do it for lunch. You know, if you put a handful of spinach in a blender, but you put a handful of blueberries, it looks purple, tastes purple, looks blue, ton of flaxseed, ton of like almond milk, or I'm a big fan lately of oat milk.
Me too. Love oat milk.
Oat milk. Oatly from Sweden, man. They make
The bomb.
You want a latte with oat milk. You can't tell the difference.
I'm done with almond milk, Joel.
Yeah. And I think oat milk's an upgrade.
What about soy?
Yeah, soy's good. Soy got beat up by a group called the Weston Price Foundation that 20 years ago, pretty meat-eating anthropology group that spread the word that soy grows man boobs and soy's, you know, prevents erections. It turns out there's a variety of chemicals. This is science. Communities that eat soy, Japanese communities particularly, have incredible health traditionally and long life. That's epidemiology. There are randomized studies, soy lowers your cholesterol, soy lowers inflammation. But the word got out that there is estrogen in soy and it makes men into women and it makes women into cancer. It turns out there's estrogen in the meat you're eating and the chicken in you're eating and the turkey you're eating because they're injecting them, and there's estrogen all through your milk unless you're buying organic milk. And that's real estrogen. That's high-powered estrogen straight from an animal with a similar chemical structure to our own estrogen. These plant estrogens are weak little wimps, and they actually will block the estrogen in your body or the estrogen in your diet from getting to the estrogen receptor. So there's no doubt, it's been shown, and I would never quote this, if you want to avoid breast cancer, you eat some soy foods, edamame, tempeh, maybe a little tofu and a scramble. And if you have had breast cancer, it's either neutral or an advantage to have some soy in your diet.
All right, I got in a fight with one of my daughters about that the other day, so I'm telling her you can eat soy.
So the Impossible Burger is soy-based, you know, protein substitute, where the Beyond Burger is a pea protein, but it's not my favorite choice for a lot of reasons. I like the Beyond Meat a little better, and I don't like it too often. But I would tell anybody, compared to the beef you're getting at McDonald's or Wendy's, Hardee's, it's a big upgrade in your health.
The problem with the Impossible Burger or the Beyond Burger is you think you're ordering healthy. You think it's a diet meal, but it comes on white bread. It usually comes with a side of French fries.
Right.
With a Coke.
Yeah, if you pull out the little
I've walked out of some bars. I go to a bar in Royal Oak, Al Mary's, that has a lovely vegan menu. Right. But sometimes I walk out of there feeling really full and kind of gross after eating a vegan meal.
Yeah.
And it's obviously, like you said, not all vegans are skinny and healthy.
Yeah, the owner of that place is one of the smartest restaurateurs in town, and
I love them.
His tequila is amazing too.
I go all the time. I'm still going. I'm saying that just because you eat the Beyond Burger or the Impossible Burger doesn't mean
it's no guarantee.
I don't know even if I'm losing calories on that day. No, probably right. not.
Do it. Treat yourself once in a while, not too often. It's interesting that those two startups, both are very much environmentally motivated. Their comment is, we don't care about vegans. We're trying to sell to bars, to bowling alleys, to Aramark, to the big food company, Sysco. We just want to replace meat for meat eaters. We don't care about everybody else. And we want to do it because in about 15 years, there's not going to be enough Amazon left to support the world and everything. They're on a path of, you know, again, even the grocery stores wasn't their market. Their market was big commercial kitchens and all to just replace meat so that you don't even have an option. And it's working. It's a good plan, actually.
I'm going to bounce around a little bit.
Sure.
Exercise.
Yeah.
So you and I talk a lot about exercise when I'm coming to see you in your office. You know, there's lots of 20 minute exercise programs out there, hour programs. I've tried Orange Theory lately, and they're telling you got to get your heart rate up into this orange zone for 12 minutes.
Get some splats.
Get some splat points. What's the best practice out there right now? How many minutes a day or a week should you have your heart rate over your 82-83%?
Yeah, the good news about, well, I'd say it's similar to talking about diet. One apple a day in your diet is an upgrade, and one salad a day in your diet is an upgrade. You know, the American Heart Association is 22 minutes a day of exercise. So you want to do an hour, you want to take 2.5 hours to get ready for the gym, drive to the gym, do a whole gym scene. Any exercise you do, from standing at your desk to walking to the hall to parking further to climbing stairs, natural movement. That's what's called the blue zones kind of concept, that these longevity areas in the world that are like Kevin's grandparents, three of the four of them. You know, nobody's going to a gym. They're doing natural things. All that's undone. So I'm really big into, you know, so-called hacking exercise, high-intensity protocols, 3-4 times a week.
The HIIT programs.
You know, the Tabata protocol that CrossFit made famous. If you're of good back and hips and joints and all, you know, doing something really hard on an elliptical treadmill bike for 30, 45 seconds back and off for 20, really hard, is very time efficient. And you get the same benefit in terms of your cholesterol, your blood sugar, your weight, and some of your training as you do on a rather boring 30, 40 minutes on an elliptical. You see everybody kind of just watching TV on. You got to work hard. There's a cool new bike besides the CrossFit called the Carol bike, no financial ties. It's an 8-minute workout. It's expensive to get at home, kind of like the cost of a Peloton. But it's only about a minute of hyper intense exercise, and they've got independent research. So our body responds real well to short, intense exercise.
If you just use a jump rope?
Yeah, you could. A jump rope, it would be an awesome workout. It's a whole body workout. You could do like really hard for a minute, back off and catch your breath and really hard, or just do really hard for a while. I would try really hard not to hurt yourself. I think that's the biggest mistake. Getting a trainer, you're not ready, being pushed. Next thing you know, your back's out and you're not working out for 2-3 months. That's a mistake. All your trainers out there listening, don't hurt people. Or make sure your client understands. And, you know, do something almost every day and make no excuse if it's 15 minutes in a hotel gym. If you're dropping on the floor and doing 50 push-ups, if you're doing, you know, 25 sit-ups, do something. And I do a whole crazy routine of some weights and some cardio. I've got these vibrational whole body plates called power plate. I love kind of weird exercise. And natural walking whenever you can. Anytime you can be out in nature getting exercise, it's a bonus. Fresh air, you know, it's good stuff.
Blood pressure medicine, should you take in the morning or evening?
Evening. This was a powerful new study, a brand new science.
I just read it. Tell me.
Yeah, we've talked about this in the medical world for about 2-3 years, that potentially chronotherapy, using timing of medication as well as timing of eating and diet, may change the response. But this new 19,000-patient study that was as good as it gets out of Europe, that, you know, half the group took all their blood pressure medicine in the morning, whether it was one pill or three pills. The other group took all their medicine at night. And they made them, it was in Spain, now that I think of it, they made them wear every 6 months a 48-hour blood pressure cuff that measures your blood pressure continuously. And they showed definitively that, one, blood pressure responded better at night by taking your medicine at night, but it also responded better during the day, which was a surprise. And number two, the important stuff, heart attack, strokes, hospitalizations, went down by as much as 50% by just flipping your medicine tonight. So talk to your doc. Sometimes, like my mother's on three pills at three different times, it's actually a little complex. Do I want to upset her apple cart at age 87 and put all their medicine at night. So I don't think it's become an absolute hard and fast rule, but if you're taking one or two pills in the morning, flip them tonight.
So just the blood pressure, not a statin?
Statins, generally, we've advised people to take at night when they were kind of the older ones that we still use, pravastatin, lovastatin. Things like Crestor doesn't much matter. But you might as well, we make more cholesterol at night than we make during the day. It's one of those, I'm getting sleep, I'm rebuilding my necessary ingredient steps. So you get a little more advantage taking your statin at night for most of them.
So let me tell you another interesting story about Dr. Khan. Because of my, I don't know if it was paranoia or whatever it was that I was going to die before 50, Joel was my cardiologist here in Oakland County, but I also had a world-renowned cardiologist in Washtenaw County, the guy in charge of the U of M system, cardiology, Dr. Eagle, Kim Eagle, who was an amazing...
Brilliant guy.
And Joel and Dr. Eagle could not be any different. I mean, they are complete opposites on a lot of things. And, you know, Joel does not love to prescribe statins. He will prescribe statins when needed, but he tries to have people change their lifestyle, whether it be eating and exercise and things like that and other type of supplements before they jump to statins, which he did with me. I was having a number that was not going down fast enough, and Dr. Eagle suggested statins, and he wanted me on them a high dose every day. And Dr. Khan's like, nope, I don't like it. How about a low dose a few times a week? And I got them to negotiate, and I've been on it. This is a true story, and I've never heard of this happening.
Right.
And that's why I'm telling the story, because I think it's important to talk to your doctors and to get second opinions. And I'm now on a little bit of a statin just 3-4 days a week, and my numbers have gone down to a point where Dr. Khan's happy, Dr. Eagle's happy, I'm happy. Yeah. And
It's back to that personalized medicine. Yeah. You know, you, like almost all my other patients, I know what your arteries are like, and I will step it up if you're aging quickly, and we'll back it off if your lifestyle's awesome, which yours is, and you've arrested aging. You're
right.
Getting younger every year.
But Dr. Eagle's like, he thinks statin should be in the water source, that we all are on it. And where are you these days on statins, Dr. Khan?
Yeah, no, if you're seeing a high volume of patients and you're not, you know, necessarily figuring out that characterizing their specific health status is crucial, as a public policy, let's say, he's a pretty prominent member in the American College of Cardiology, you need to make public statements. You know, as a public statement, lower LDL cholesterols are important. Statins have generally proven to be very safe and effective. In heart patients, there's really incontrovertible evidence, but how many of those people were told if you change your diet, if you exercise, if you manage your stress and sleep better, you may see a massive improvement in your numbers and maybe we can back off.
Try that first.
Either try that first, or if they're a serious heart patient, you know, don't try that first, but try it while you're taking your medicine and reevaluate.
So I'm showing Kevin this book. Yeah. My girlfriend gave me this book. Right. She was against statins.
Right.
But these are all her earmarks, and she wants me to go through them with you. We're running out of time, so I'm not going to do that today. Maybe next time.
You can do it over a black bean burger at Green Space.
We can. But, I mean, you know.
So, you know, the author of this book, a local physician, a friend of mine, somebody I respect a lot, somebody who speaks nationally. I mean, is it good to take a natural enzyme system in the body and block it every day of your life? His point would be, wherever we're talking, these things are there for a reason. It's a bit of a stretched argument. There's nobody in America that gets their cholesterol down to zero. We do need some cholesterol to make vitamin D and to make testosterone. But we're also dying of heart attack, strokes, erectile dysfunction, and other cholesterol-related disorders all over the place. So I think there is a middle ground. And, you know, there's a very strong philosophy now. It's taken a long time. If you don't have heart disease, you don't need a statin. Well, that's why I test people's arteries. I'd see if they have silent early heart disease. And I won't use statins. That's been an analogy. It's like giving chemotherapy to somebody without cancer as a prevention. We don't do that. I mean, you don't have artery disease on the CT scan or a carotid ultrasound. You get lifestyle, you get patients, you know, you don't get a prescription drug. But there's still a lot of people walking around with scary, scary known or unknown heart disease. And sometimes statins just are absolutely needed 3-4 times a week to get those numbers where, you know, I want them and they should be.
Great. What's the healthiest oil out there these days?
I like WD-30, but something a car requires the 40 brand. No, I know what. Oil. So there is a sector of medicine that has studied oil-free cooking, oil-free diets. The sickest heart patient trying to avoid. I have patients that come to me. I'm supposed to have bypass next Wednesday. Can you work with me? Believe me, I sweat bullets. I'm taking a lot of responsibility, and that could be in Spokane, Washington, or Ferndale, Michigan. I will put them on a whole food, plant-based. You learn how to saute in water, wine, vegetable
stock. You wanted me on oil-free.
Because that is the data for reversing serious heart disease, and I don't jack with the data. That's published data that's actually reimbursed by Medicare called the Ornish program, the Pritikin program, the Esselstyn program. That's not necessary for everybody. To answer your question, if you're going to put it on food, organic extra virgin olive oil is what I drip on a salad. My current plant-based keto, my patients bring me olive oil straight from Sicily. That's what I'm using. I know how pure it is. If I'm going to do high temperature cooking, either organic safflower oil or maybe canola oil. And people go insane when you say that. But canola oil is very high in omega-3. I only would buy organic because our food chain is so friggin'.
So not the coconut, not the avocado,
Avocado on a salad's not bad. But avocado's not rich in omega-3, and that is a nutrient we need. I mean, eat ground flaxseed, nobody does. Eat chia seeds, nobody does. Eat walnuts, people eat almonds, but walnuts have omega-3. Light and nice leafy greens, that big bowl of salad you need every day. One meal a day, have a salad bigger than your head. I tell people that.
My girlfriend is nervous about Bernie Sanders and his heart attack. What is your take on that?
By age 78, surprising that he had silent heart disease probably for decades. We could have picked it up when he was 58 with a $100 CAT scan, although 20 years ago it was a $1,000 CAT scan. Price has come down. It was available 20 years ago. And I'll just give a shout out. Anybody wants to learn more about that heart scan, there's a movie on the Netflix called The Widowmaker Movie. And it's just a cool movie describing why you need one of those heart CT scans so you don't die.
Kevin's getting one before we do our next podcast.
You know, Bernie should be fine. I mean, the way we treat emergencies, and he was one. I've got ongoing symptoms. My enzymes are elevated. I'm having a mini heart attack. Boom, boom, cath lab stent medication. That becomes a very low-risk situation. When you go back 30 years, how we dealt with that, you were 30% likely to die. He's going to be fine.
Have you read articles about him since he's had his heart attack? Like, did he not know he had heart disease?
Yeah, he missed the symptoms, like Bob Harper, the famous trainer from The Biggest Loser, missed the symptoms. It's so easy. You're busy. He was plenty busy. I got heartburn. I'm just tired. I'm pushing too hard. But by the time it builds up as like a burning elephant on your chest, I mean, at some point, and you can't breathe. Right. But that's you're having a heart attack. He didn't have, I believe, the big heart attack that you really like President Eisenhower had in the 50s. He just had the blood tests went up, and officially you have to call it a heart attack.
Sounds like Bernie needs to come to see you.
Bernie needs to come to see
me. Let's get Bernie in here.
Next time he's in town. We should have introduced him.
Bernie needs to eat at Sweet Green.
My timing's better than Bernie, I get the benefit. Bernie will have to catch him next time.
You're catching it 24 years early. So here's the deal. I have literally 100 more questions. We're not going to get to them all today. Kevin, go get your CAT scan.
We're going to do that.
Next time we have Dr. Khan on, we're going to go through the results if you're open to it.
If I'm still here, they may put me in immediately.
We might have to do it in the intensive care unit.
You guys have to come see me.
I'm concerned now, Kevin. Yeah. I'm concerned. But Dr. Khan, thank you for coming in.
A pleasure.
This was awesome. So fun. I learned a lot, and I highly recommend anybody out there who has not seen a doctor in many years or is having some heart problems to come see you. Your information will be on our show notes and whatnot. And I know you're good at getting your information out there. But Joel Khan on Telegraph Road in Beverly Hills, Michigan, Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure. Awesome. Pleasure.